In part two of today's program, we want to talk about a magical show that is about to open at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. It is a work that, in a sense, retells the familiar and beloved story of Peter Pan. The work is Peter and the Starcatcher, based on the blockbuster novel by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, transformed for the stage by Roger Rees, and written by Rick Ellis and Wayne Barker, and opening this weekend at the UW-Parkside main stage theater, and running this coming weekend and the next, so April 26th, 27th, 28th, and May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And I have Rachel Schwartz joining me over the telephone to talk about this play, the novel upon which it's based, and about their production, which is sure to be a delight in many, many different ways. Rachel Schwartz, we welcome you back to the morning show.
It's great to be back, Greg. Thank you for having me.
So tell us, first of all, how this particular play, Peter and the Starcatcher, found its way onto the theatrical schedule at Parkside for this school year.
Sure. So, you know, with our advent of our musical theater program, in which we launched in the fall of 2021, we've been ramping up our production in musical theater. Typically, Parkside had done one large-scale musical every other year prior to my joining the team. And this year, as our quote-unquote non-musical year, we instead did the new work reading of a musical, Burn, in the fall, and then this piece in the spring to continue to give those students opportunities with music and dance in preparation then for our production of Carrie this upcoming fall. We noted for our faculty and our students that there was a need for a moment of joy, levity, and other creativity as a moment of deterrence and pause from the the standard heavier college fair. So it was really an exciting piece at the time. Additionally, it was a big priority to me to really welcome young people in for production at Parkside to ensure that there was a production on our season this year that was, not to be trite, but good for the whole family, as it were, and that we could really open up for matinee opportunities for our area schools. So while looking for a piece that fit the bill in terms of what tone do we need to really contrast the season, how do we find this moment of joy and levity, how do we continue to further training in musical theater? How do we welcome the community? We landed on this beautiful, wonderful, and extraordinarily delightful piece of theater.
Explain to our listeners what I touched on in my introduction, but did not go into detail about at all. Namely, that this is a retelling of the familiar story of Peter Pan. Tell us a little bit about the very, very popular novel, actually now series of novels, and mm-hmm. in a sense, what these novels did with the story of Peter Pan.
Sure. So I love this. The original author, Pearson, gives this really delightful interview, which I highly recommend. Ridley Pearson was the co-author of the novel Peter and the Starcatcher, and the need for writing Peter and the Starcatcher actually came out of reading Peter Pan, J.M. Barrie's novel, to his own little girl. And as many small folks do, she started to ask the wonderfully precocious questions of why this, and how did this happen, and when did Peter and Hook meet, and why is Peter a boy forever, and why are these things happening? And he went, I don't know. And while Ridley Pearson is more standardly known for being a mystery writer, so he found great joy in, taking a tonal shift. He contacted one of his colleagues who was much more of a comedy writer, and they started to create this novel together collaboratively for their children. They really wanted to create the character of Molly Astor, who would later on become the known Wendy's mother. They wanted to create her in recognition of their own daughters, the strength that she possesses. They wanted to create a world in which this story comes to play. So it is not intended to be a true prequel, but rather a fanciful telling of how could this have all come to be? So it's a really fascinating engagement with Barry's work, you know, that came to origins in the novel Sensibility, because children ask why, which I think is just awesome. And then, of course, Disney Theatrics was the major push for it to come to the stage, which it did, you know, roughly 10 years ago now, and has become a rather large hit in, you know, regional theater across the country ever since.
So, for instance, this is a play that will answer questions like, you know, how did Captain Hook lose his hand? Or
absolutely.
How did Peter Pan get his name? What created this place called Neverland? In other words,
Neverland.
This play ultimately gives at least one answer to those kind of questions.
Absolutely, and you know, why can't Peter ever grow up? And who are the lost boys? And you know, all of these wonderful, beautiful questions that, again, could only come from the imaginations of children. So,
we're speaking with Rachel Swartz about UW Parkside's production of the play Peter and the Starcatcher. The production opens this coming weekend and runs into the first weekend in May on the main stage at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. So maybe you could just trace the kind of essential outlines of the story of Peter and the Starcatcher.
Absolutely. So, you know, as we do so, I want to highlight that this is one of those stories that, you know, while it is written for the while it is written with children in mind, it is also deeply touching and also wickedly funny. So, you know, incredibly appropriate for adult audiences as well, rather than simply simply folks looking for a space that is welcoming of their young folks. So we start, you know, I really treasure how the piece starts because it reminds us that at the core of Peter Pan is the concept of imagination. And so we start with this sensibility of imagine that this stage is a ship, and imagine that these ropes contain all of the British Empire, and imagine this and imagine that, which then launches us to two ships taking the ocean as they embark on a mission to destroy what we later identify as Star Stuff, which would then, you know, of course, in Peter Pan land become what we understand to be pixie dust. So there's a mission to destroy the Star Stuff as we don't truly know what it can do. It makes people truly who they want to be in the world, which is something both wonderful and deeply dangerous at the same time. So it's not to be trusted, and we're on our way to get rid of it. But of course, there's some cutthroat pirates who would like it for their own for less than savory reasons, of course. So we get the introduction of the character who will someday become Captain Hook. Within the context of this story, he's referred to as Black Stash, as he does not yet have a hook. So we get the introduction of Stash and Smee as the two cutthroat pirates who are after the Star Stuff and engage with the Astor family accordingly. Of course, there's a shipwreck, because what comedy wouldn't have a shipwreck? Thank you, William Shakespeare. But which then leads us to the isle that becomes Neverland. The Star Stuff spills into the ocean, creating general mayhem, turning fish into mermaids, and encountering the folks that live on the island themselves, which I think this piece does a miraculous job in in handling that content with great care, as well as with great comedy. So then we see the all of Act Two is the unraveling of how Neverland comes to be Neverland. There it is.
Tell us about the challenges of bringing to life a play like this that has a fair amount of enchantment and magical elements woven into it. And just give us a kind of a sense of the work of your technical team to bring this play really vividly to life.
Most assuredly. I think that there's the right tap immediately of, I'm quite lucky at UW-Parkside to have such fantastic colleagues in the areas of design and technology. Jody Sikas is our scenic designer. As we created our original concept surrounding the piece, we really leaned into this sense of imagine, imagine, imagine. And so what we wanted to create on the stage was a tree fort, something that children would play in the woods. Because as soon as kids say, okay, well, we're playing this thing and you're this now, they are. It happens. It is at that juncture, our games of imagination become canon. So we wanted to create that space in which that was possible. And Jody has built me the most fantastic tree fort, complete with a curly slide, climbing ropes, fireman's pole, and all the bits and bobs for our actors to truly play. That has been a treat. We then have an alum of Caitlin Gerlich into costume design, and she has done a fantastical job truly in, creating mermaids and mollusks, asking our cast, what's your favorite mollusk or cephalopod in her design process to create those creatures, magical transformations from sailors to pirates. She has really thought, not to be cliche of outside the box, but she has really pushed the envelope as to what can be with great, great will. And then, as we stay in one physical scenic location, the world and individual place changes has largely rested upon our fantastic lighting designer, who's also an alumni of our program. So we have really leaned into Jessica Baker's world in creating that. Additionally, as the production, came to be, I want to really acknowledge my cast in this moment in time, because they were folks that were bringing ideas and concepts throughout of, for example, we utilize various prop elements to create one of the cabin, and one of the pieces was a fish on the wall. And, the cast member looked at me and said, well, I think the fish has to be upside down. If it's on the wall, it's dead. And I went, of course it is. How could it not be? So, things like that, as well as the way we physicalize some of these stories came to be from, I did my best to stay out of their way in terms of how do we create as an ensemble? What discoveries can we make? How do we incorporate? We're using a large amount of handheld percussion Foley. When does this come in? How do we utilize the monkey drum and the slide whistle and the crank and all of those great things to become the world in which we're living? So I just want to acknowledge incredible designers as well as a cast that really thought in the land of what if, and what if this was this, and how can we be that? And their questions and their concepts and ideas as a collaborative ensemble really propelled this forward to a beautiful place.
Fantastic. Say a quick word, if you would, about the music that is part of this.
Absolutely. So the music is both equal parts Foley as well as, part ways musical. It lives in this wonderfully bizarre in-between land. We're being led by Carmen Fisher-Risi as our music director, as well as she's on stage keys and percussion Foley. She's an outstanding pianist and percussionist both, which is fantastic to have. So there are beautifully sung choral moments. There are ridiculously goofy ukulele sea shanties and everything in between. So it's music is really fully integrated into the piece throughout. you know, while there are only a handful of sung moments in the show, it is a constant underscoring in the land of keys and percussion, written for two musicians, which she and the cast have undertaken exclusively. So I do want to acknowledge that that really diligent collaboration that she has spearheaded in that so beautifully.
So the play opens this coming weekend and runs, as we said, into the first weekend in May. We are recording this interview actually Tuesday morning. How do things feel? How ready are you and your cast and crew to launch your first performance?
Well, we head into our first dress rehearsal tonight. So tonight, we spent the weekend incorporating all of our scenic elements, our outstanding sound design by Kevin Bray. I didn't mention him previously, and I really should, because he has created a plethora of worlds, whether it's Peter's flashbacks to his days in the London orphanage, or, you know, as we, and I'm not going to give too much about when the crocodile appears on the scene, though there is a fantastic puppet designed by student Jay Lofty. When the puppet appears, really incorporating how the sound design of the crocodile. So that was all this weekend. And tonight we get to bring our costumes into the world. I'm so thrilled. So it's looking great. You know, we've got a handful of steps to go, and then we're ready to share that with friends and colleagues along the way.
Fantastic. So opening night is this Friday night, and again, Peter and the Starcatcher is performed on the main stage of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. If people are interested in tickets, what is it that they do?
Sure. They can either purchase on the night of the event at our box office, or if they'd like to go to the UW Parkside Rita website, we're able to purchase tickets there. There are shows this Friday and Saturday evenings at 7 p.m. as well as Sunday at 2. Next Friday is a two-show day. There's a 10 a.m. So if there's any folks, while this is typically our school matinee, there's a lot of folks that would rather come during the daytime, and they're welcome to that show on that time as well. So that is Friday, May 3rd, that we'll have those two shows, additionally Friday, May 3rd, that's 7 p.m., Saturday the 4th, 7 p.m., and our closing performance on Sunday, May 5th at 2. So, oh gosh, I'm looking at the wrong, no, that was correct. I saw my calendar on the April date and was looking at the May, and I scared myself for a brief moment there. So sorry, Greg.
No problem.
Looking forward and looking ahead to welcoming folks into a piece that is, you know, if they need a moment of levity, imagination, joy, and a great laugh at this point as spring finally peaks forth, it is just a blast of a show. So I highly, highly recommend we all take in these moments of joy.
The play again is Peter and the Starcatcher at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, opening this Friday, and it runs this weekend and the following weekend as well. Rachel Swartz, the director of this production. Rachel Swartz, best wishes to you, to your cast, and your crew for all of these performances of Peter and the Starcatcher, and thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you for having me, Greg.